Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Hover. Register a domain name with Hover and build your online brand today. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase. And by ZipRecruiter. Looking for your next great hire? ZipRecruiter offers simple tools and powerful matching technology to find you qualified candidates efficiently and effectively. It's the smartest way to hire. Try it for free at ziprecruiter.com/android. And by WordPress. Make WordPress.com your online home. Plans start at just $4 a month. Go to wordpress.com/allaboutandroid to get 15% off your brand new website today. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 356, recorded on Tuesday, February 13th, 2018. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Florence Ion.
How you doing, Flo?
I'm doing well.
What's up, Flo? But we don't have Ron with us.
We don't.
He's vacaying, is that right?
Is he?
I think he's got some sort of...
He's doing something fun tonight. I mean, this is fun too, but that is a fun thing.
Oh, that's right. It's not vacation. He's going to a show.
He's doing a fun thing
tonight. It's kind of like a Valentine's Day show.
Yes, he's doing a fun Valentine's Day thing.
That's
tonight.
Appropriate.
Very appropriate.
Considering tomorrow's Valentine's Day, if you didn't know.
Which is why we're all pink today.
I have nothing to do with my clothes. Welcoming back to the show, Steven Zimmerman from xdadevelopers.com. How you doing, Steven?
Good, yourself?
I'm doing awesome. It's great to get you back. We actually have, I ran across an article from XDA on the upcoming Qualcomm Snapdragon, I think it's the 845. Got your XDA's article in there, and I was like, man, we got to get Steven back on. So I'm really stoked that you could hop on and join us tonight. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Awesome. It's great to have you. And we also actually are going to start today's show off with an interview because I don't know if you guys remember this, but last May, Ron brought an app to the arena. We brought a lot of apps to the arena, but this was an AI, an artificial intelligence infused email app called Astro. And the app actually, very recently, just last month, they made a bunch of big changes, added some new features, and we have the opportunity to talk to Tony Lee. He's the Android engineering lead for Astro, and he's here to chat about the product and kind of, I don't know, shoot the... Whatever you want to call it, about what
shoot
it's like.
Shoot the Astro into the sky.
I was going to say the actual thing, but I think I like that better because that's not, it's going to get censored. Anyways, Tony, it's great to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm honored.
Absolutely. It's really great to get you here. So, this was almost a year ago that we brought the app into the arena. So maybe as far as a little refresher is concerned, for those who don't already know Astro, or maybe they don't remember a year ago. I know sometimes that's hard for me. Tell us a little bit about the product to start off with. What is Astro and what kind of is unique about this email product?
Sure. In its most basic form, it's an email client. We support the backends Gmail and Office 365. It's a modern email app, so it has all the modern features like swipe, snooze, send later, email tracking, all those good things that you can find in most email clients. The thing that we have that's a little bit different is we have an intelligent assistant who we like to call Astrobot. And what Astrobot does is she helps you in the background and in the foreground. In the background, she helps to analyze your contact, your inbox, and help prioritize email. Then she'll also make suggestions about things that you might want to do with that email. She'll notice if you always move email from a particular person to a particular folder. She'll detect spam and ask you if you want to unsubscribe. And then she also helps you in the foreground. She introduces a conversational interface, allowing users to sort of just talk to the assistant to do the typical email-related workflows like moving, deleting, archiving, marking things as read, even sending email, sending a reminder, and all those things. And of course, Astrobots get smarter with every release. So as you mentioned, we just had a 3.0 release, and we did some major enhancements in terms of what she can do, what she understands. But it's just a moving target at this point.
As far as Astrobot is concerned, because, I mean, you know, obviously artificial intelligence is such a big, I hate to say buzzword, but I mean, we're hearing AI is being, you know, put into everything these days. And, you know, it really does seem like a pretty major paradigm shift as far as how we think about computing. I'm curious to know, from your perspective, building a product that integrates AI into the product, it isn't just managing your email in a simple email management tool, app, whatever, but you're actually using AI and the data that's required in order to drive that AI to make it smarter. In developing the product, in developing Astro around AI, what were some of the challenges that you encountered in kind of bringing that next level of artificial intelligence into the product?
That's a great question. So AI is actually a term that's used pretty widely. Some people like to coin the phrase AI, but really they, under the hood, they do some machine learning and they do some NLP. There's sort of different forms of AI. I'm not actually the perfect person to talk about this in terms of Astro's implementation, because a lot of the client intelligence is server-based. We have a lot of APIs into our backend server, and the server is the one that does most of the heavy lifting in terms of the analysis. But what I can sort of speak to are the things that I see from the point of view of a client engineer. Mm-hmm. The first thing that we see all the time is the incorrect level of expectations. I think people expect Astrobot to do everything right now. And there's a lot of disappointment when she doesn't understand something or doesn't do something the right way. So sort of setting the right expectations that AI is sort of it's something that grows naturally as your product becomes more and more mature. Right. Your AI becomes more mature and can handle, you know, more requests, more functionality and things like that. Another thing that might not be that obvious is part of the AI that we use is NLP, natural language processing. So we have voice activation. You can sort of conversationally talk with Astrobot. And internationalization is actually something that's sort of lost in the shuffle of all the other things to do with implementing an AI product. We do have some bad reviews on the Play Store, and a lot of them have to do with translating to like languages like Portuguese or Italian or Spanish or Japanese. Mm-hmm. And one thing they don't understand is that when you're doing NLP, there's lots of nuances in those languages that might not translate easily to an English implementation. So that's, you know, that's one of those things that we're dealing with on the client side. And, you know, we expect to be international at some point, but it's going to take a little bit longer than just translating a strings.xml file and right. then pumping it into the product.
That's why, remember, Bixby didn't come out for a while from Samsung, because they had a hard time bringing over the AI over from Korean to English.
Right.
I have a question. So I'm actually familiar with Astrobot. I just spoke to you guys last year, just kind of reviewing the product. I used it for a little while. One thing about Astrobot, it also has Slack integration, which is just another little tidbit to put out there. If you use Slack a lot, it's really makes it nice and easy. Just kind of like deal with your email inside the Slack client, where maybe you have a lot of your chats going on anyway. I am curious, would you integrate this platform? Would you integrate this AI with like a platform AI? Like, for instance, bringing Google Assistant in, because Astrobot is so useful outside for sure. But I see its usefulness in apps like Slack. And I wonder, my gosh, what if I could do this through like the Google Assistant app, or do this, you know, maybe vocally? I can do this with my voice assistant.
Well, we're already integrated in with Alexa. So in terms of Echo devices and Fire devices, you can already happily use the Astrobot app. We do really want to integrate with the Google Assistant, but it's just not our highest priority right now. We're really focused on building a lot of team-related features in our next release, helping teams within the enterprise work on their workflows and use our AI to help their workflows become a lot more streamlined. The short answer is we're going to get there. It's just from a business standpoint, it's not our highest priority, but it's something that I personally want to get at, and might even be a side project that I work on in the next couple months.
Yeah, and I know part of the update that you just recently did involves calendaring. It sounded like you had a lot of requests to integrate calendaring into the mail app. Explain a little bit about what you've added with that update.
Sure. What we added was a lot of convenience. It was a feature that many of our users requested. sort of the point being, a lot of times you context switch between email and calendar, and it'd be really nice if you can sort of look at it all within one app, maybe switching a tab versus switching an app. Another interesting thing that we did with calendar is we didn't just bring it over and just show you a simple one-day view, monthly view. We actually also implemented this concept of an agenda view. And what that does is it sort of groups together upcoming events, and it also integrates in some AstroBot-related intelligence, some Astro-specific knowledge. For example, on that calendar, you'll see when snoozed emails will get unsnoozed, as an example of the interesting things we implemented on that view.
That's awesome. One question that I have for you, I mean, considering this is an email app, right? And I mean, and actually Astro is very cross-platform. You've got kind of web apps that can be used on desktop.
Mac app.
So, you know, there are a number of different ways to get email on whatever device that you're using. If you have an Android device, there are a number of like officially sanctioned ways. Let's say Google has their Gmail app, and it's really hard to pull people out of their habits, out of their routines, or maybe out of their trust of the fact that they just know how to use the built-in Gmail app very well. And I have to imagine that's a challenge for you know, anyone who's trying to make an app to compete with those official apps and pull them towards a third-party solution. What has your experience been on that?
Yeah, so you're right. There definitely are a lot of issues around trying to change the behavior of users. I guess that's what I'll call it.
Yeah.
Behavioral change. If you switch apps, instead of hitting the Gmail icon, you're hitting the Astro icon. So changing that behavior is tough for a variety of reasons. And what we've observed at Astro is there's really three groups of issues that we've seen. The first one's around security. You kind of touched on it, but it's a little bit different. The way we authenticate users against the Gmail or Office 365 backend is using OAuth. And there are some people that don't trust our OAuth screens, that they feel like we're mocking up a Google login form and stealing your passwords, right, or whatnot, without realizing that we're actually forwarding you to a Google or Microsoft page to authenticate. And what we actually get is a token that can be revoked, so we never really actually have your password. The other one has to do with accessing your content. So, of course, for AstroBot to do her job, she needs to have access to your email content so she can analyze it and assess it and whatnot. There are some people that have concerned that we're planning to mine this data and sell this data to third-party companies, which is totally wrong. Like that's I don't think anyone even has any ad experience or data experience at this company. You know, we're all just email experts. And I personally find that a little bit funny, because a little bit maybe ironic, because a lot of these users are Gmail users, and that's actually where Google makes all their money, is to sort of use that data to better optimize or better target ads based on your search history, your email content, your location history, and those things. So that's sort of the first thing. The second one is we support multiple backends. So we support Office 365 and Gmail. So we have to have a single UI that can surface the features of both platforms. And sometimes it gets a little bit strange. You know, Gmail has the concept of multiple labels, whereas Outlook has a concept of folders. So sort of having this layer of abstraction doesn't let us get as precise with the specific features that you may love in that particular backend. So that's a bit of a challenge. We are addressing a lot of these issues, and there are ways that we can create the right UI to surface both. We don't want to have a switch if Gmail, if Office, if IMAP, if Yahoo, but we will definitely have some backend specific UI. And it's sort of the last thing that we've found, which is more from an engineering standpoint, is in terms of APIs, we're a third party company. You know, we have to get approved to use a particular API. We have a certain rate limit that we're allowed to use on this API. So we recently had an issue when we released Calendar. We had some code that was accessing Calendar a little bit too often, and Google actually blocked us and wouldn't allow us to make any API requests. So of course, as a third-party company external to Google, it's hard to resolve those issues. But if you actually worked at Google, you could just walk over to the API team and say, hey guys, what's happening? And the last thing is just leading edge APIs. You know, Google releases new APIs all the time, and we're not in the know as being a third-party company. So we learn, just like everyone else, through developer blogs, I/O, and whatnot, what's coming down the pipeline, and we can only react to the information we have. Whereas, you know, within Google, they might have these cool, awesome, leading-edge APIs that we're not really aware of at this point.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions, is how you know, on the side of Android, things are changing all the time, and how, I don't know, how some of those changes have really appealed to enhancing the feature set that you offer with Astro. Of course, you have some unique perspective on this. You actually worked on the Android telecom team at Google, so you are an ex-Googler. Is that Zoogler?
I don't think I've actually ever said it out loud.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, from your perspective, you saw kind of how the sausage was made from the inside at Google. And now you're kind of on the other side and you're working with those limits from a third party perspective. How do you feel about the evolution of Android since you left? Actually, when were you at Google, and how have you felt since you've left as far as how that applies to third-party app development?
Oh, okay. I'm actually a two-time Zoogler.
Oh, okay.
I was at Google between 2008, 2011, working on the enterprise mobile team. I left to do my own startup, and then I rejoined in 2013, I believe, and that's when I joined the Android team. And the funny thing is, you know, I was there for a little while, and the minute I left, I was just like everyone else that's not part of Google. I have no more insight. You know, my friends won't tell me what's going on. Of course, they shouldn't. So, like, really, it's just like the blogs, the I/O stuff. You know, just live watching live streams of all the different breakout sessions and whatnot. So, I don't really have much more information than what you guys have in terms of like the cool stuff they're doing. But what I have noticed from my knowledge is that, which sort of piqued my interest, are more personal features. For example, my larger team, I led the telecom team, but my larger team also was responsible for battery optimization in the platform. Mm. So I like seeing like the doze mode and all these cool battery optimization features that are coming out. Because to me, that means this team's doing well, succeeding, their features actually getting published. And that's really good news, and I'm excited for them. Another thing I like to see personally is just, you know, the work around notifications. I love being able to respond to a text message in the notification, the custom views, the inline actions. That's great. Another thing I recently sort of embraced was Kotlin.
Yeah.
So I love to see that Google is embracing Kotlin. It's a great language. You know, not a lot of our code is written in Kotlin, but we're shifting over to Kotlin just because of, you know, the coroutines, the extensions, just all the great Kotlin features. I love seeing that Android's embracing that instead of strictly forcing you to stay with Java. And then the last thing, which actually was released today, was my old telecom team. I noticed they released a feature where you can now lawfully record phone calls. And of course, it's going to be a very polarizing feature. You know, some people don't know why you need this. Some people absolutely need this to get the job done. But it's great to see that my team could overcome, you know, the legal ramifications, the carrier requirement ramifications, and all the paperwork and due diligence and all these things that you need to actually release a feature like this. So I'm very proud of them, and I think that's really cool.
So Tony, you're talking about, I think I read this article, that it's potentially a feature that will come out in the next version of Android, right? Android P.
Yes.
And it's Android. And actually, Stephen, you probably know all about this, because I know I read an XDA article on this topic, and it looks like you're waving your hands, so go for it.
Yeah, so Android actually has had the ability to record audio built in for a little while now, although I think it's only for root apps can you actually use it. But what they added recently was the ability for carriers to select to have a tone played every 15 seconds. When recording isn't active.
Oh.
And that's because for some countries, it's two-party consent for any phone recording.
It's like right. That in California as
yeah.
well.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So in other words, if you're recording using an Android device, whether you're doing it at root level, right now you could probably make this happen, you're saying, at root level, but there's no way for the person on the other side to know that you're actually recording or not. I know that without root, there are a lot of apps on the Play Store that say that you can do this, and then you get it, and then you try and test it, and it actually doesn't work in a lot of the cases that I've experienced. But do you need root in order to do that right now?
There are ways to record without root as well, and I know there are some apps that work.
Yeah, okay.
But the built-in functionality, I believe, needs to be installed as a system app. So Lineage OS now, rather,
right.
Would theoretically be able to do it. But unless you got Root, you can't really install Sling as a system app to take advantage of that specific functionality.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. So so then, Tony, you see news like this, and you realize from your perspective, when I was in there, like, how would you have felt? Like, did Google actually announce this, or is this just sleuthing on the side of Android journalists? And I don't know, from the insider perspective, how would you feel knowing that information like this, if it's coming out in a future version, was getting out into the public and it shouldn't?
Oh, I think it's actually public knowledge at this point.
Okay, like, this one was. Okay.
Yeah. I saw posts, like, basically my friend that's still on the team posted something, and okay, it was a link to a site. So it's public knowledge at this point.
Good. All right. No toes. But I do wonder when that happens, and it happens very often in the Android world. Yeah. We find out information we know we're not supposed to know quite yet. And I have to imagine for the people that are working hard on the other side of things, that could be a real challenge.
Like knowing your friend is engaged before her parents.
Exactly.
Hard news to keep.
So I guess this is your chance, Tony, to kind of give us your final thoughts on kind of where Astro is heading, what you're most excited for, mm-hmm, that you guys are working on, and tell people where they can get Astro.
Sure. Yeah. So right now we're sort of in the fallout of our 3.0 release. There's some bugs we didn't find that we're fixing. We're educating people on all the new features. A lot of the UI moved around. Lots of new widgets doing new and amazing things. So we're sort of educating people, fixing bugs, just sort of stabilizing the release so everyone knows what they're getting and everything works well. In parallel, we're also planning our 4.0 release. And the major thing about this 4.0 release is going to be, as I mentioned earlier, very team-oriented. We've done a lot of research in terms of how teams can optimize their workflows leveraging AstroBots and leveraging a lot of other Astro features. So that's going to be the main focus of 4.0. We're hoping that it's going to hit us sometime in Q3 potentially. But we're really excited because this is a game changer. I think for teams at enterprises, this is going to be a real game changing release. And of course, you can always go to helloastro.com. From there, you can get links to the Play Store or to the iOS the iOS App Store. We also have a Mac client that I think you download right there on the website. And I hope everyone gives it a try. You know, if you're not 100% happy with the email app you're using right now, you know, it's probably worth giving Astro a try because there's a lot of things that we do that are a little bit different. And maybe those differences are going to make a big difference for you and how much time you spend in email.
Not a lot of other email clients in the Play Store. There's just not that many.
Well, I feel like it's a challenging category, though, because people are very particular about what they want out of an email client. Yeah. Do they want it to be simple? Do they want it to be full-featured? You know, have all that kind of time-shifting capability?
I don't even know what I want, to be fair. I don't know. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Yeah,
no, no problem. It was totally my pleasure to come on. Nice to meet you guys in person, and anytime.
Right on. Keep us posted on features and all that, and we'd love to hear from you again. Tony or Anthony, Tony Lee, helloastro.com to check out Astro for your email. Thanks again, Tony. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks. Bye. Right,
bye-bye. All right, we're going to get into the news. We've got hardware. We've got apps in the next two segments. But before we do that, let's thank the sponsor of today's episode of All About Android, and that is Hover, building your online brand. You know this, in the world of the internet, it's never been more important than now. Your online identity begins with your domain name, and you have to find the right domain name for you. What is your passion? And make your domain name around that. Buying a domain name is the first and biggest step to building your personal brand online. Your domain name tells the online community who you are and what you're passionate about. Web hosts, websites, they all evolve as their brand, the site, the hosting needs change, and keeping your domain separate from hosting gives you the flexibility to choose the right platform for your business. No one wants to be stuck with a solution that doesn't meet their needs. Hover offers the best-in-class customer support team, no upsells. Hover Connect feature actually allows you to connect your domain name to many website builders with a few simple clicks, making the whole process a lot easier. Personalized email that matches your domain further supports your online identity. You know this. Who doesn't need a domain name nowadays? It feels like everyone has one. So it's important for yours to stand out, and that's a can be a big challenge. Hover has over 400 domain extensions to choose from to help you brand yourself online. .me, TLD, the .me is a unique extension, just as one example, to use for your portfolio to showcase who you are. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? And what you do. If you've got a portfolio website ready to launch, get the .me extension. And if you're new to Hover, you'll get an additional 10% off any domain extension for your entire first year. Not a bad bonus. Go to hover.com/twit to check out their deals. It's time to get your portfolio website up and running so people can find you on the web and know who you are. That's hover.com/twit to get 10% off any domain name from Hover. And we thank Hover for their support of All About Android. Victor, we're not going to remove your chance to do a news bumper. Hopefully you were ready for this. It's time for the news.
If one gets an Android-powered smart vacuum for Valentine's Day, is that bad? Asking for a friend.
No, that's actually really...
No, I think that needs to happen.
That's actually, although Android-powered? You mean like powered through an Android app?
Well, maybe smart, I guess.
Maybe it's running off of Android. Android, yeah. As an OS, powers many things. Not
I cover
just
robot vacuums now, by the way. So if anybody needs opinion or advice, just tweet me.
I think there's an Android IoT board at I.O. last year, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. I guess technically you could create your own little robot vacuum.
Maybe
you could even program like a real vacuum to just drive itself like a Boston Robotics dog, except it's a vacuum cleaner pushing itself.
Did you see the video a couple days ago with yes. The two walking through the door?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Google adjacent news. Technically, yes, it's Alphabet. Technically, it's Alphabet.
Technically, sure. It works.
Sorry, I got you guys off the rails.
This is a podcast.
I'm doing Google searches for robot vacuum running Android. I'm not finding anything.
Just in case. There's something I haven't found.
The Mi robot is Xiaomi's product. Hey, it could be running Android.
They do have
sure.
a robot. I forgot they had their own robot vacuum. So technically, maybe that's Android-powered. You know what else is Android-powered?
What?
It's going to be, I mean, Android P is going to be Android-powered.
Yeah.
And
oh, maybe that'll be what it stands for. Android-powered.
Whoa, we just figured out Google's new marketing campaign.
But that would require them to change the whole dessert tasty treat thing.
It would. I don't know, Jason. You and I could really start a revolution.
I know.
I'm just saying. Okay, we're not starting a revolution today. Instead, we're going to talk about the quote-unquote juicy gossip that Bloomberg has for us about Android P. It's mm-hmm. so juicy. So this gossip saw Android P out on the town in Hollywood. Apparently Android P is getting himself a notch.
Oh?
Or apparently or some enhancements that'll help him support the notch or her or whatever they want to be at that Android level. Non-traditional displays at the OS level will be supported in Android P, which includes, of course, the notch that everybody keeps talking about for some reason, and foldable phones.
Okay.
As well.
Foldable displays. So, foldable we know those displays. Are on the horizon.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know they're on the horizon.
We can surmise
that probably they are because of all the stuff out there. Anyway, the article also mentions multi-display support, by the way.
What was that, Steven?
I think we might already have notch support.
Yeah, Hold on, we're getting there. Let's get through just the news. There will be an emphasis in the new Android P on Assistant, building, you know, those features that have been put in third-party apps, which, by the way, I saw that manifest the other day. A link came up for me to jump into Yelp, uh-huh. my Google Assistant, which has never happened before.
Oh, okay.
It's very interesting. Also, for those of you who are following the drama of the internal naming conventions, it's being internally dubbed as pistachio ice cream, not pie. P-I.
Hmm. I'm still holding out for a Pi Day release.
Yes.
I think that's got to happen.
Maybe. So what we as we said, this is apparently juicy gossip, but it's not really juicy gossip. And I appreciated that you actually included this link in the doc today, which was a link to J.R. Raphael's column on Computer World talking about how some of the news, I mean, it's pretty expected to see these incremental changes in Android P at this point, especially following the pattern of the last couple of years of Android. We've noticed it's always building upon, obviously, always going to build upon software optimizations. Obviously, battery is going to maybe be a little bit better than it was the last time. These are all like really catchy marketing things. Very easy to bundle in there. But it's also just worth noting that, like Steven said, the notch was on the Essential phone already. So clearly, the Essential team had, you know, coded that ability into the phone.
From what I understand, the Essential team worked closely with Google in order to make that work. So I don't know if it's I don't know if it's a standardized part of Android. I could be wrong.
I'm sure they just shared it. They just shared that work.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense.
You know,
I think there's at least, isn't there a couple of the Chinese phones have?
That's true. There's Chinese phones that copy the iPhone X perfectly.
We talked about one a couple of weeks ago. What was it?
Alcatel, was it?
Yeah,
it may have been Alcatel. It was
Alcatel. It was last week.
Yeah. It was last week. I'm pulling up. Alcatel. Oukitel, not Alcatel, but the other one, the Alcatel, and it's the Alcatel U18. From last week, and it would have the notch display as well. So, who knows? Maybe that's launching with Android P. And these press photos that we saw, or these leaked photos that we saw.
That's nice wishful thinking from a future $150 phone.
Yeah, possibly not. I think it makes sense. I think it's easy to read the Bloomberg article and go, oh, so Android P just wants to get on the notch bandwagon. And I think that's not what it's saying. Well, it's basically saying, we are adding support for whatever you want to do with displays. If you want to put a notch in it, or you want to have it be a foldable thing across, basically widening the capabilities of what display support is inside of Android. If before it just supported a standard rectangular or square display,
boring.
Now it will allow you to get more flexible with it. That's probably what this actually means.
I have more to say on the perspective, the Apple perspective, but we'll get that in the hardware part.
Oh, I might save my comments for then also then, I guess.
Well, I feel like
Steven and I are on the same wavelength about what we want to like talk about, and I feel like
hardware that
on if, three
I mean, yeah, I think, you know, when we talk about how many phones Google sold in the hardware section, I think that would be a good time for us to have that discussion.
Okay.
I think Steven and I are syncing on over the internet.
All right. We will hold that thought for another few minutes. Until then, we have this, the Snapdragon 845,
yes,
you may remember, announced last December. It's now getting benchmarked by a select group of people. XDA was actually invited to Qualcomm's 5G day, where they got benchmark access for a few hours, which is
in
pretty nice.
In sunny San Diego.
Nice.
Nice refuge for the winter.
I'd go to San Diego right about now. Steven, what can you tell us about the upcoming Snapdragon 845?
Yes,
and in particular, what did we not know before that we know now?
To be honest, there's not really many surprises, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It's got exactly the performance improvements that Qualcomm said it would have. Some slightly bigger because of the you might have noticed the memory scores were surprisingly low, which kind of dragged down the averages, mm-hmm, which was what Qualcomm was talking about, the averages. But the individual scores for like single core on Geekbench and stuff like that actually had a decent jump when you focused in on them, but still not enough to catch up with what Apple already has in the market for single core, or what Samsung supposedly will have in the market in a couple months for the S9 potentially. But at the same time, it's a lot of what Qualcomm's doing with the A45 isn't really about the CPU or the GPU. It's about the peripherals, and it's been that way for a couple years now. They're pushing heavy into developing better radios, better I think like there's a couple different names for it, but all the AI computational stuff.
Right. Yeah, we're hearing more and more about that on the chip level.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not a super custom core for the CPU or anything like that, but it is still a nice little improvement. It doesn't really seem to fall behind any, like, too far behind in a particular spot other than the single core score. And they are making solid advancements in everything else that seems to be laying the foundation for something that we may not quite be able to see yet this year, but really seems to be, and this is me talking at the moment, not the site as a whole, but it really seems like they're laying the foundation for something that goes beyond what we currently see on phones. And Samsung is also trying to do this. Apple is also trying to do this. It's really building to computational photography and all those other things that we can't even really fully imagine yet.
Right. So why then is there so much conversation still centered around benchmark numbers of memory and CPU power? I feel like as a whole, we're all consumers that we care more about than just, I mean, we have the speed. I feel like at this point in time, we have the speed that we're very happy with, if that makes sense. I've been living with fast speed for at least a decade now. I know what it's like, let's just say. But now I think about all these other things like Wi-Fi connection at home, cellular connection when I'm inside of a tunnel. I think about how fast and how quickly it processes the AI, my Google Assistant, how long it takes to process what I'm saying, the machine learning. I wonder if we should be editing our bench or our tests of processors to just include like how long it takes to just like load these simple actions that, you know, we're not really considering.
Like something within the benchmark that is focused on AI?
That is focused on AI, that is focused on counting more for instance, I mean, we do have suites that do that, but I just think in general, when we talk about processors, to talk about more than just how fast it can process all these things,
right,
or how fast it can render all these graphics, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I mean, we're already starting to move towards that.
Yeah.
We still have benefits from stuff like Geekbench and 3D Mark, but we're getting to a point where we need to look beyond that as well. That doesn't mean that the CPU tests are suddenly useless. They still do have their place. And they still are very useful for trying to figure out how powerful the phone is and how fast it is for CPU-bound activities. But you also have to look at holistic benchmarks like frame drop analysis, which we did a little bit on the reference device, but it's not really going to be representative of the final final units.
How do you test that? How did you test that?
Massive Python script and USB debugging for developer mode and a bunch of other stuff.
In case anybody was wondering, that was the answer for you.
Write that down, and now you know how to do
now
it
you know
in excruciating
how.
Detail.
There's your project for the weekend.
Yeah. Pretty safe to say that, things, and actually thank you to JJ for bringing this up in the chat. Safe to say that the 845 won't be hearing about Spectre and Meltdown and all those kind of things with the 845 going forward. I mean, I feel like at this point, it's been on their mind.
I mean, the A75 is vulnerable to, I can't remember which ones it's vulnerable to, but it's vulnerable to at least one of them. But what I haven't had a chance to confirm yet is whether or not it supports PCID, which is the simple method of mitigating. First, not simple, the non-resource intensive method of mitigating the vulnerabilities.
Right.
So it's hard, and we don't know for sure if the reference device had the mitigation in place or not. So we may see a small drop relative to what we're seeing right here, but I can't imagine it'll be too major of an effect on final performance.
Right. Interesting. And do we know at this point of which phones? We probably have more of a hunch than we do actually know which phones might be the first to see the 845. I'm assuming this the S9 series would have this. It would be kind of strange if Samsung released without the next processor, but I guess it's possible.
I surprisingly haven't heard anything about it for Samsung either way. I mean, someone knows, obviously, but I just haven't seen anything really, which is a little strange.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't heard about that yet.
Is it strange, or
is it just the way it's supposed to work?
Or is there a reason for it?
I guess we don't have to wait too long to find out, do we? When is the Samsung event? It's at the end of this month.
Yes.
In like a couple of weeks.
Yes.
So we will have live coverage of that, by the way.
I mean, they'll essentially be starting training for the reps that go around and talk carrier reps around now.
Okay.
So information will start coming out soon, but maybe not quite yet.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like we won't have to wait.
So
that
what
long.
You're saying is I should go camp out at my nearest Verizon store until the employees get there. Mm-hmm. So I'll just sleep in my car in the parking lot. Nobody will know anything weird.
That'll totally work. You let us know how that goes. Vlog the whole thing so we have some content to show on next week's episode.
Well, I mean, they won't have... because they send out people to train the carrier reps after the phone launch, but they won't have specifics for the device yet, but they'll have a general idea of, oh, the phone is going to focus on this camera feature kind of, or it's going to be really good in this department. So prep them for giving a sales pitch about that.
Yeah.
I have a feeling their sales pitch. Well, I have a feeling.
I've got a feeling. Feeling deep inside. Oh, yeah. All right. It's time to move. Before we get to the ad, let's really quickly go to the wearable hardware.
That's an Apple Watch. Put that down.
Oh, sorry. But, you know, where we talk about, do we have that bumper? Is that even in there anymore? That one. I think. I never know until this part. No. The other one. Well, there's one that actually says
he has a little wrench.
It all transforms.
Although pretty
soon
his watch is going to be really, really out of, it's going to be out of spec.
There won't be any more watches.
Well, the watch is just going to be too old and it won't work anymore.
I feel like it's kind of already there.
So, fun headline from our friend Ron Amadio at Ars Technica. Android Wear is getting killed and it's all Qualcomm's fault.
It's a good headline.
It was very catching. I definitely read it.
Yeah.
So the article, you know, very much surmises that Android Wear's stagnation could maybe possibly be linked to this decision from Qualcomm. And the fact that the Snapdragon Wear 2100 SoC, it's now 2 years old. Qualcomm skipped on an upgrade to it last year because there are few to no options for SoCs that compete with Qualcomm's. OEMs have no options but to use this two-year-old chip. So they're not really looking anywhere else for wearable chips.
Yeah.
You know, but that affects the overall speed and battery inside the hardware. Both Apple and Samsung have their own internally designed chips so that they bypass this having to have a partnership with another OEM. I mean, they just take care of it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Huawei and Google have their own SoC capabilities, but nothing for the watch yet. Now, my take on this is it doesn't really matter what the processor is, because the only people that are really taking stock in Android Wear right now are fashion brands.
Mm.
So it's like nobody even knows what the heck is inside the watch. All they know is that it syncs with your iPhone and your Android phone, and it's not an Apple Watch. It's a Michael Kors or a Fossil or whatever.
Right.
That's just funny.
This is the one spot that I'd say is probably the most important spot for CPU performance and GPU performance for the processors at the moment.
True.
Because this is the spot that every little bit makes a massive difference for battery life. I've wanted a smartwatch for over a decade now. Seriously, over a decade. And I still haven't bought one because I'm still waiting for something that can last longer than they can currently while still providing the performance that they're currently providing. And we're close to it. We almost have the hardware for it. But it's not being put into the Snapdragon Wear platforms. Like, we have something based on like the Snapdragon 450 would be a fantastic Snapdragon Wear device, let alone something like a 10 nanometer A53 based processor. That would be incredible for battery life, but we're not seeing it for some reason. So it kind of begs the question of holding it back, because Qualcomm's not going to give up on market segment just because. There's got to be something holding it back.
Well, yeah, and I understand where you're coming from, Flo, as far as like the people who are buying the Michael Kors watch probably don't care, you know, very
know
much
very
what the
extreme,
processor is.
But
at the same time, this processor, if memory serves, even when it came out 2 years ago, was not blowing anybody out
That's
of the water.
True.
And that was 2 years ago. I feel like any amount of performance is going to lag worse, you know, over the course of 2 years. Let alone if it starts off kind of being rather unimpressive to begin with anyways. It's just kind of, I don't know. I think it whether people realize it or not, it affects their perception of how much they like or don't like their watch, you know, in tangible and intangible ways as a result of that.
I also this is totally anecdotal what I'm going off of here, because there are sales numbers and such that we could tap into to really look at what's going on with Android Wear. But the way, from what I see in my tech using, you know, social groups and what I see out in the world, I see a lot of Samsung watches that are paired with Samsung phones. Because when you're going to the carrier, and you're buying a phone from them, they're going to throw in a watch for you, no problem. And I see a ton of Apple watches because, again, those were very well marketed. People knew about that. I have actually never seen any of those fashion watches on anybody outside of our little, you know, our circle, little bubble of journalists and such.
Meanwhile, I would have probably guessed that the fashion watches would have done well, because when you look at the traditional fashion industry, a Michael Kors watch, I imagine, would have a lot of buyers. But for whatever reason,
it's $400
really that barrier. Yeah.
Versus... Yeah, this is a tricky, I just don't understand why we couldn't just make it a little smaller in the LG watch style and then just put a Google logo on it. Like, that's all I wanted, and now this is happening.
Who knows? Maybe you'll get it at the next Google hardware
event.
Not to mention, Samsung makes a good watch. Their latest wearable, is it the S?
Yeah, but it's just not my size.
The Gear
S3?
Still
too big for me.
Yeah.
They have very small wrists.
Everybody that uses it loves it.
They have bigger wrists than me. I'm a special case. Make me a special watch. Come on.
Going back to
work hard.
Make me watch this shrinks the watch smaller. Sorry, Stephen. What were you going to say?
Going back to what you were saying earlier about the processor, the Snapdragon Wear processor being outdated. It released in 2016 as a ARM version 7 processor on 28 nanometer. That's old. That's really big, too.
Yeah.
That's big in size for a thing you're supposed to wear on your...
Right. So then that dictates, to a certain degree, the size of the hardware that it ends up in, the battery, you know, power that you end up getting out of that, the performance and kind of the feel of the UI and zipping through it. Whether people realize it or not, that's kind of how I feel about this, is like, whether they realize it or not, they're going to realize those pieces of information as they use it over time, and that will shape how they actually feel about it and whether they actually want to buy another one. It might not. That's not good.
Maybe it's the sales numbers. Maybe it really is just down to the sales numbers.
Oh, going back to the jumping back again to the fashion watches, though, for sales numbers, I mean, I haven't seen a single one of them either, and yet supposedly they're selling. I know a lot of them are getting bundled with you can upgrade after X number of years to Ray, you're watching at a discount.
Mm-hmm.
But suppose you're selling it, we're not seeing them anywhere.
Yeah.
So they're got to be selling somewhere. The question is where?
Where do you...
To the parties that we're not going to.
If you have a really stylish Android Wear watch, will you please reach out to us at... What's our email?
Let us know where you are.
At AAA.
Give us your address. AAA, no, don't give us your address. AAA at twit.tv if you want to let us know what you...
But
thoughts.
Do send us a photo or something, or tell me which one you have. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Anything that's not made by a company that also makes a smartphone. That's the one criteria. So Fossil counts.
Yeah.
Ed?
All right. I think so. I wasn't sure if we were done, but I think we're done.
Can I go back to something, too?
Oh, yes. Sure, Victor. What's up? Oh, you found it.
I think so. Oops. Wait, no.
No?
No.
See?
Yay!
You got it. Now we've got it locked in there.
Unfortunately, that SoC in that watch is very old.
Yes. That bumper is almost as old as... Anyways, let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode. Then we'll get into some other hardware news. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by... ZipRecruiter. If you're hiring, ZipRecruiter is awesome, and it's going to be awesome for you. Every business needs great people and a better way to find them. It's not easy to find great people sometimes, especially on the vast internet. Something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it. You want something that's more effective than that. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, it identifies the people with the right experience, and then it invites them to apply for your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. Makes it so easy for you. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They spotlight the strongest applications that you receive, so you never miss a great match. So you don't miss that one piece of detail that would set that resume, that application, apart from the rest. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you actually find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Android. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Android. ZipRecruiter.com/Android. That's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of All About Android. And now, Victor, to confuse you even more, we're going into the original, the OG hardware, which I guess we kind of already played, but we can do it again. There we go. So you ever heard of the Yeti?
Well, I know it's a microphone.
It is the blue Yeti. That's right. That is one version of the Yeti.
It's also a monster. I think there's one inside the Matterhorn Mountain in Disneyland.
That's another Yeti. There's apparently a third Yeti.
Okay.
The information spotted the Yeti traveling through the mountains. No. Had a report last week that Google is working on its own gaming console.
Go on. No, finish. Yeti. Sorry.
Not only that, it would offer a subscription streaming service for games streamed to the console directly, also possibly supporting Chromecast devices. And yeah, the code name for this is the Yeti. So, you were going to say?
I was going to say, Google's answer to Twitch.
Wait a minute. Not a streaming platform to watch games streaming
it. Oh, true.
This is like live game streaming.
Yes, you're right.
Streaming to your console.
Okay.
So, similar to PlayStation Now. Requires less hardware, stringent hardware requirements on the console side because it's really happening in the cloud and being zapped.
This is like that service that was out several years ago.
And apparently PlayStation Now as well, which I have not used, but
no, I haven't used the PlayStation.
That's what it does.
PlayStation 2. Sorry.
So is this going to be a refresh of a resurgence of Android TV and all that, or are we just looking at a service onto other platforms?
That's a really great question because Android TV kind of seems to be the set-top box that you plug into your TV. Why couldn't it be the console? Or are they actually saying, no, we're releasing a game console that handles the streaming? I don't know. I kind of would be really surprised if this just wasn't folded into Android TV, but maybe there's a technical requirement.
That's really hard to market on a shelf. It's really hard to I feel like it's very hard to market a game console and a TV set-top box. Those are two different aisles at Walmart. Yeah. And those are two different customers, two different, and it's all I'm assuming.
I confuse them probably from my own perspective because our set-top box is a PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
I never play a single game on it,
but that's
my set-top box.
But that's an add-on that as a person who, I wanted to get the PlayStation so I could play my games. Oh, and awesome, it has TV too. But I feel like a lot of people who want TV first, you know how parents are. They don't want their kids playing
parents
games.
Parents just don't understand.
They don't want their kids playing games all the time.
Parents just don't
understand. Absolutely right, Flo, though. Didn't Microsoft try something similar with the Xbox One and it kind of fell flat?
Yeah. They did, right. They had the, it was like a stripped down version of it that was just for like media stuff, right?
The all-in-one concept. Where it's a gaming console and a set-top box, and it it threw people off a little bit, I think.
Okay, in the other direction.
JJ just in the chat just reminded me it was called OnLive, the service that I'm talking about, and also made a good point about the huge cloud infrastructure that Google's got in play. So naturally, they could do this sort of thing because they got the servers, honey.
Yeah. Yes, it was on live. And thank you to Victor, who also sent that to us through the chat. Yes, Google would be the right, would be a really great infrastructure. They have the infrastructure to be able to support something like this and get that latency nice and fast. I just don't understand why you would do this and not bring it to Android TV, because I imagine it's probably also running Android, right?
Oh, well, I'm certainly certain that it would just be an app that you could download onto Android TV and put in or something. So I don't know.
If it's that, then they wouldn't release a console.
I guess.
I don't know.
Listen, after what happened to the Ouya, everyone,
stop releasing game consoles.
Leave it to Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo. Let them have it amongst themselves. As a consumer, I'd appreciate it.
I wonder if you can get Ouya on eBay still.
I have one if you'd like one.
No, I don't actually want one. That's why I wonder if they're if you can buy it.
You can't pick up a Mi Box instead.
$49.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. And the Mi Box, those have had very good reviews. The Mi Boxes.
Yes. I've got one. It works well. I don't use it as much as I probably should, but it works.
As just a straight up Android TV, right? It's an Android TV box by Xiaomi. Yep. That's right. I forgot about that one. The Ouya game console can be found on eBay, by the way, if you're willing to part with
$35. $80. That's how much I bought.
$53.
Anyway, this is not about Ouya. This is about the Yeti.
No one's buying any more Ouyas. But I'm curious. Apparently they had plans to release this by last holiday season. Obviously, that didn't happen. Google has also very recently hired Phil Harrison, who has 15 years as
the executive
in PlayStation, also the Xbox divisions. So Google has gaming on the mind.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Who wouldn't want gaming? Who wouldn't want to have gaming on the mind after the way the Nintendo Switch has been performing?
No kidding.
Just saying. Do you guys remember Google I.O. last year? I don't even remember yesterday. Last year's Google I.O., Google showed off Chromecast, the Chromecast for visualization from the Google Home. So if you remember, it was like this nice little screen where it had like nice little weather icons kind of letting you know what's going on. Well, now you can actually ask Google Home to show you the weather while your Chromecast is on and connected. Now, my TVs are always on and connected, so I can do this. I actually did this today.
Just hanging out on.
Yeah, because
the Chromecast
TVs really are just monitors, and so the Chromecast is always on.
I always thought this was kind of weird because, like, in order for me to actually use this, I have to be like, okay, I'm going to go turn on my TV. Wait for it. Of course, I've got an ancient TV, but wait for it to come on, and then ask my Google Home to show me.
Sync it up while you're downstairs. I go downstairs. I say, "Hey, G, toss the show on from YouTube TV on that TV," and it does the thing. Anyway, now you'll be able to toss a whole nice, cute weather visualization. It's only on for a little bit as like you ask for it, and then the Google Home responds in addition. So like you'll hear an audio feedback about the weather, and then you can visually see it
and then a boop-doop
on the TV. Now this is just these contextual visual responses. They're just kind of slowly rolling out. First-gen Chromecast don't have this feature, which is a bummer. So if you have a first-gen Chromecast, I'd suggest you just use it in the guest room and in the kids' rooms, because just got to give it to the people who don't, you know,
care about the weather.
No, they don't. It's true. And you're going to be the one to tell them to take a jacket or not anyway. Yeah. So really.
Actually, I take that back. My kids totally care about the weather. It's one of their favorite things to do is to ask the Google Home what the weather's going to be like today.
Well, the Weather Channel was my favorite channel.
They pick their jacket accordingly.
It's true. But I do want to bring up the fact that we've got smart displays on the horizon coming forth from not only Google, but they're part OEM partners as well. Uh-huh. Now, remember at CES, we had just a ton of these being displayed and shown off at various booths around the various show floors. And so this is definitely, I mean, we've got Amazon already in this realm with their little displays and their Echoes. So this is a natural move. Maybe Android TV is not going to matter because of this.
I doubt
maybe.
It.
Well, I mean...
Maybe.
Maybe. Who knows?
Anything in this world
anything
is possible.
Anything can happen. There's robot dogs, for goodness sake. Like...
All right, touche. Good point. Okay, we teased a little bit ago about what we're going to talk about later in the show. That later is now. How are the phones that we talk about all the time selling, you may wonder? You may ask yourself, you'd be sitting there bored, you're like, how are the phones that All About Android talk about all the time? How are they selling, self? And then you look it up and you realize that IDC's Francisco Geronimo actually tweeted out about the Pixel device shipments, saying that the shipment numbers doubled in 2017. So in the year 2017, doubled over what they were able to do the year prior with the first generation Pixel devices, although I think this counts all Pixel devices, not just first generation, but also second generation. So doubling your sales in a year, no small feat, very commendable. But they doubled to around 3.9 million units, which is not very much, particularly when you consider that the market size is around 1.5 billion.
And a lot of sites reminded us that Apple definitely sold way more iPhones.
Well, yeah, they were quick to point that out. I mean, but are these different categories entirely? I mean,
yes.
Google's ramping up its hardware, or are we making excuses right now for Google? What do you think, Stephen?
Yeah,
I've historically for the Nest devices, I was always one of the first people to jump out and say that they're different categories. But in this case, Google's trying to go up toe to toe with the
fruit
top
company.
Phones out there, with the S8, with the iPhone.
But it's their first year.
Their second year.
This is for the first year.
Okay, yeah, I guess.
It's their first year, and marketing and brand recognition and Samsung. It's a different, it's a completely different atmosphere out there than what Apple had to start with in 2007. It's a different journey.
At the same time, it's their second phone company that they're buying. It's their, I can't even remember how many total devices for Nexus plus Pixel plus the other branded ones plus the Android One phones. They've been heavily involved in quite a few phones, and they're putting out a premium priced phone, and it's a fantastic phone, but it's not selling quite the same level. And it's not like they're not advertising either. They have they plastered Yonge and Bloor subway station, one of the busiest subway stations in North America, with ads top to bottom, which is not cheap.
Right.
And it's still 4 million phones.
Yeah.
But
they did really ramp up their advertising, I will say. I've seen a lot of Google advertising.
Listen, I don't think we can compare apples to apples on this, because I see a very different... No, I completely agree with Stephen, but I also see a very different trajectory for our dear Google here. I think I don't think that the phones thing matters to them. I think the ecosystem of hardware is what's going to be the big premise of the marketing spiels. It's not going to be like buy our phone. It's going to be like, you can buy our phone and have it be a part of this ecosystem, but we really want you to buy our smart speakers, and we really want you to buy our TV dongles, and we really want you to buy all these little things to kind of, we really want you to buy our Nest cameras. It's all going to be just selling of the ecosystem, and I think in a couple of years that's going to be what we're going to be comparing. Not so much like phone numbers, but you know, how many people are subscribed, whatever, to one particular ecosystem, whether it be Apple, Amazon, or Google.
But at the same time, the ecosystem itself is also falling a little short right now. I mean, they're not bad devices either, but at the same time, the Clip camera or Clips?
Yeah, the Google.
I pre-ordered one and it's
Google
coming.
Clips.
It's coming in a week and a half.
Oh, nice.
You just reminded me. Keep going. Sorry.
It's interesting, but it's also pretty expensive for a point-and-shoot camera. You got the earphones, which are, they're nice, but for the price, are they the best out there?
It's true.
Do they have the best integration out there for the price? And it seems to be a trend right now. It feels like they have all these things that are almost at the level they need to be, but they're not progressing forward. They just keep being at that almost level because everyone else is also going up along with them.
Yeah. Well, and as someone, I think it was Wake County said in the chat room, the market is so matured at this point. It's hard for anyone to come in and expect, even a company as gigantic as Google, maybe to expect to come in and be able to go toe-to-toe with Samsung or Apple.
I like head-to-toe, by the way. I think we need to. No, I do.
Head-to-head, toe-to-toe. And also along these lines, Essential, we have Essential. IDC also reports 88,000 units sold in Essential's first 6 months on the market. So that first, that last half of last year, 88,000. Andy Rubin did say that this would be a slow ramp up. The numbers, aren't necessarily astronomical. 88,000 devices in and of itself is not a lot. But is it? But then, they're a startup. Is that high for a startup? A newcomer onto the scene? Nobody knows their brand.
Well, shoot, we should compare this to anyone to Nextbit.
Nextbit,
RIP.
Yep. Oh. Nextbit's the one to compare to. I mean, they're not high sales numbers, but at the same time, the device is nice. Not even for the price, just in general. It feels great in the hand. It looks great. It runs extremely smoothly. Camera's lacking, but it's catching up with as they improve the software. I mean, it's not the best phone on the market, but it's not the worst at anything for the price either.
Yeah.
It's especially not, now. How much it costs.
Yeah.
Especially now.
And what's interesting is they're really targeting the ads quite heavily, I've noticed. Like, I've seen a metric, just a ton of ads on Twitter and stuff for Essential. More ads than anything else over the past couple weeks.
You know, I've seen a good number of ads on Twitter as well. And actually, one of them really cracked me up because it was this guy. It was this guy sitting with his Essential phone with this like huge, vast city view behind him. And you could tell that they were using probably another Essential phone to do the background blurring thing.
Mm.
And to separate or whatever, and maybe to show off the example of that quality. The problem was, on the left side of his face, it was blurry. And on the right side of his face, it was sharp. And I meant to tweet out about it, because it was really like, really, you didn't catch that? Like, however you did the blurring thing, you missed one side. Or whatever you used to do that, totally missed one side. So
didn't even just kind of kick it through Photoshop.
Yeah, little, even if like, it was through Photoshop, they missed that layer. They forgot the layer.
I'd much rather see an ad that shows the camera.
True.
That like doesn't quite show the camera at its best.
Yeah.
Then see them using like an SLR instead.
Totally.
You mean instead of the press photos that usually get put on the phones? So they're like, this is an actual picture. It's just like, no, it's not.
Yeah. And we've seen that a lot this year, oddly. There's been a couple. I know. What was the really big one? Or it's not this year, but in the past like 365 days, what was the really big one that got caught? Using a point and shoot or an SLR instead. I know
there was one sometime in the last year.
I can't remember
what it was, but I do remember hearing about that.
I think it's been like two in the past year.
Was it the P9? No,
was maybe
it was Huawei P9.
Okay.
From Petapixel. Petapixel, Huawei slammed for implying a DSLR photo was shot with the P9. July 5th, 2016.
There we go.
It's the day after our nation's birthday.
Nice. Nice memory on that, Stephen.
No, but it's not something new for them, but at the same time, it's... Yeah, great. It's a nice picture. I can grab my SLR and go take a nice picture as well. But that's not what I'm buying the camera, the phone for.
Right.
I want it to be a nice phone picture. I want it to be as good as I can get from a phone. I don't want to see... Oh, this is an SLR picture that this might be able to take something like, as they later claimed.
Yeah.
It's useless.
So we should just take all your pictures with a Pixel 2. Done.
It's a nice camera.
What phone are you using right now, Steven?
Yeah.
I'm actually testing the Essential at the moment.
Nice.
So I'm working through that. I actually don't have any Bluetooth headsets, so it's a little bit of a pain that way for me. But... other than that, it's one of the nicest phones I've held.
Embrace the dongle life, Steven. Just embrace it. I have, and you know what? I'm happy. I'm a happy woman. I don't mind.
You've embraced the dongle life.
No,
and you are happy. Victor, I hate to throw this on you, but I'm putting a link below the story that we were just doing. And if you have the breaking news bumper at your fingertips, you might as well fire that. Because it's time for some breaking news.
Not with cinnamon, hot, and spicy flavor.
Maybe not. Yeah, you'll just be underwhelmed. Essential tweeted out something.
Oh.
A date, 2/15/18.
When was this? Oh.
This happened earlier today.
Wow.
And I don't know if this is the next color of the existing Essential phone, because they had that one color that... That
the
wasn't
emerald
released yet.
Green. That
is
would
that
look...
what this is?
Yep, that's got to be. Because you see, it's the same color. Yeah. It's the same trim color, too.
Okay.
Hopefully, because everyone was raving about that color combination. I haven't seen it in person yet.
No one has it. Actually, it was a couple Ocean Depths, I believe,
was the name
of the color. And Ron was just talking a couple of weeks ago about how he was really
disappointed. So Ron brought it. He manifested it into reality.
Ron is the reason for this.
Ron is magic.
Holy cow. All right, good. We got some breaking news in today. I love it when it works like that. Okay, and finally, we'll round it out with a single bit of important app news right now. Oh, yeah.
Your essential.
I know it's really big in the dock. I don't know why.
Just unformatted.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
There we go. All right. There we go. Okay. Now do your thing.
Well, I'm trying to, but it keeps. Okay.
Sorry.
Let's start over. New version of Android Messages is rolling out, and it looks like the APK has hints of what's to come for messaging on Android, which is very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting.
I just don't know if I can get excited about messaging on Android anymore.
Okay.
I can't do it.
All right. Well, I know we've all been burned one too many times. So what we've got here, Allo users, you're not getting... Oh, wait. No, we have this already. Web client is coming. I was thinking of... Anyway, text messaging. Web client is coming. It's handled the same way that Allo handles it, with a QR code for syncing to your phone, which I'm assuming means it'll work over the same Wi-Fi network. You've got texting over Wi-Fi when the carrier signal is absent. So that's kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be nice, too, for when you're on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
Higher resolution photo capabilities. That's a thing iMessage can do, by the way.
Right.
Wi-Fi.
Right.
Read and typing indicators in real time, so you know if someone is typing, trying to, you know, apologize to you the right way. Man, it's got to be a trip being a kid with read receipts. like being a kid in love with read receipts. That's a hard life.
Oh,
speaking of Valentine's Day, also a stat: Android Messages has 100 million downloads in the Play Store, which probably means it's on a lot of devices.
Yeah.
I mean, it does come standard.
Right,
many Android devices.
I think that's good news for I think the folks at Android Central were pointing this out as well. They wrote an article about how this might actually be the best chance, and I feel like we've heard this a million times, the best chance for Google and Android to compete with the feature set that iMessage has. And you pointed out being able to send SMS over Wi-Fi is a feature. The read receipts, the typing indicators. All these things, though, have existed in other clients more or less, right?
I believe, didn't they kind of
exist in Hangouts?
They absolutely did, but the problem is being seamless.
Yeah.
Being able to switch over when, this person SMS, this person this person that.
Yeah.
Not having to worry is the problem that Google hasn't figured out for messaging. And... I still don't see a path forward for it yet. I hope they do solve it, because, I would love to see that solved, but it's just a mess still.
Wouldn't it be great if at some point in the future,
just
15 years from now on All About Android, because we're still doing the show in 15 years.
We will be.
We finally have like a solution where we go, wow, that whole messaging thing that we've dealt with for years, we don't have to worry about that anymore.
Our children will have
the world
their messaging problems solved.
Yes.
And there will be no climate change.
We've been closer to solving it in the past. When we had like XMPP, which Google Talk supported, that was true interoperable message anyone anywhere. They just need to add it in the ability to seamlessly switch between SMS and XMPP, and they would have been, they would have actually had a client that could message anyone seamlessly.
Yeah.
And then they remove support.
Wah, wah.
It's Let's not just forget.
It's a roller coaster.
Sorry. So. Sometimes I jump a little fast there. I was going to say, let's not forget RCS as well.
Yes.
Although I was trying furiously a couple minutes ago to Google and see which of the carriers are supporting it, because as far as I remembered, Sprint was the only one
well,
in the U.S.
Oh, I'm not sure about the U.S., but there are a couple of supporting it up here in Canada.
I know, Canada, but, you guys are already on it. I was very jealous when I heard.
We've been a little bit slower than hopeful, but a couple carriers do support it, and I think we will be having full rollout within like a year or two. But at the same time, going back, I think I remember hearing something, although I didn't fully read into it, so I'm not quite certain about it yet, about Google finding a way to do RCS without carrier support.
There was something in, what was it? Yeah, it was actually at the very tail end of that Android Central article.
Where they
did mention this. Let me scroll down here. That's right. I remember seeing that. Basically, sorry, trying to vamp here.
Google Jive, the RCS client for Android. Well, what?
We've definitely talked about that in the past. And I don't know how that integrates in, but Android Central says there's a line referencing that users can, quote, upgrade to access the upcoming goodies. And then they wonder if Google's found a way to bypass the need for carriers and OEMs to adopt RCS. In my searching, it looks like T-Mobile and AT&T are on board to support the new RCS standard. I don't know if that's increased since October, but that was as of last October. But I also remember when we talked about this back then that there's different ways to implement RCS that are incompatible with other ways or aren't as compatible, let's say. And so I don't know. It still sounds overly complicated.
This is not consumer friendly. The TLDR of this is not consumer friendly yet.
We just want the one messaging app to rule them all on Android, and we have yet to
see
that.
And if you're going to make it
Allo,
then fully commit.
No, I don't want to see one messaging app to rule them all on Android.
No.
I want to see one open platform for everyone that everyone integrates with on all platforms.
Like BBM. Oh, yes. Like when BBM was really popular.
Oh, no. Like XMPP.
Yeah. I see where you're going.
We had it.
Yeah, but then all these companies can't control their own thing and make it the standard.
Going.
It's what we're trying to do with RCS, but at the same time,
yeah,
there's still a lot of work.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating. I get exhausted with messaging on Android.
I just don't talk to anybody.
Yeah. Maybe I won't.
Shut everyone out.
All right. We're going to jump into the arena in a second, but before we do, let's thank the sponsor of this episode of All About Android, and the sponsor is WordPress. You already know WordPress. I know Flo knows WordPress.
I do. I have a WordPress site.
Yeah?
I do.
You've been working hard on that WordPress site.
It's not live yet.
You've been getting it just perfect. You're working hard.
I'm working on it.
You don't
want to
lift the veil until it's absolutely perfect. We understand. We know that building something new, something that others connect with, is a lot easier with the right tools. And that's why we're excited to have WordPress.com as a sponsor. You see WordPress all over the internet. We use WordPress.com every day. And let me tell you, whether you're looking to create a personal blog or a business site or both, creating your website on WordPress.com helps others find you, remember you, and connect with you. You don't need experience. You don't need to hire someone. WordPress.com guides you through the entire process from start to finish. They take care of the technical side, which is really nice. So it's easy to get your site up and running without having to know all that technical stuff. They have hundreds of beautiful designs to choose from. To get you started, you'll get built-in search engine optimization and social sharing. Their business plan actually lets you access hundreds of plugins and themes. Their customer support team is there. It's made up of WordPress experts who are eager to help you get the most from your site. They're available to help 24 hours a day, Monday through Friday. And, by the way, weekends too. Plans start at just $4 per month. And you should just check it out for yourself and you'll understand. You'll see why 29% of all websites run on WordPress. That is crazy. Get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. go to wordpress.com/allaboutandroid and you can create your website and find the plan that's right for you. That's wordpress.com/allaboutandroid for 15% off your brand new website. And we thank WordPress for their support of All About Android and the TWiT Network. And now, boom, 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 it's time for the arena. Boom.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Arena.
Oh, yeah. Let's see here. I need to pull up last week's poll, and I'm doing that right now to see that stuff.
What?
Wins.
What?
A 39%.
I wasn't actually expecting that.
Congratulations. Stuff gets the win. 39%. Second place was Prism, which I think we decide. Did we decide that Prism was not allowed?
I can't remember. They don't remember.
I can't remember.
Crap. We'll have to consult with Ron on that one.
Ron might have some changes.
I think Ron would say yeah.
He would say, yeah, it was disqualified. Yeah, it was disqualification, says Wade County. So I'm assuming since Wade County is saying that it was DQ'd, then the scores must reflect that. So anyways, Prism was voted second, 35%, even though it was a rehash, and I apologize about that. Third place, Sketchit, 26%. Do you want to read the Wade County stats?
Yes. So right now, the arena through the week, guests are at 17. Dang guests. Ron is at 16. Jason, you're at 11. And you're with me because we're both at 11.
11.
We're at 11.
11. Turn up to 11. 11's a good place to be. I'm feeling good about 11 right now. Okay. So that means that I am the big loser. You are the big winner. So you're going to go last. I'm going to go first. Steven, I will show off your app in after my app. I have it all loaded up and ready to go. But I will start things off with my app. If you like gestures, like I like gestures, oh boy, you're gonna love Edge gestures. So as you can see here, Edge gestures, once you've activated in the accessibility settings, allows you to add portions of your screen that can detect different gestures. Big surprise, right? You can see I'm previewing them right now, and that's because left edge, I've got it enabled. If I took it off, you'd see that preview zone goes away. And you can do that for the right edge, and you can do that for the bottom edge. So basically, this allows you to have these very extreme portions. I find the bottom one to be a little hard to hit because of the navigation buttons down at the bottom, which I was covering up there. So I probably wouldn't live with the bottom edge one, but maybe depending on the phone that you have, that might be a little more useful if you didn't have those buttons resting up against it. But I've got right edge and left edge activated in this case. So if I do a long press on the left side, should see the challenge on this, of course, is, oh, maybe it's because I'm in the app. No, come on. It was working earlier. Wah. Here, how about I do the double tap right there? I don't know if you could see that.
I see the tapping.
Do you see me tapping?
Yes.
See how I'm tapping? You couldn't do that before. You could only swipe. You couldn't tap.
Wow. But,
okay, yeah, it's not working. Anyways, it's called Edge Gestures.
Sorry.
let me see if I deactivated and reactivated. It was working in the office. What are some of the other gestures? Maybe that's a bad one to show it. Long press power dialogue, long press power dialogue. Yeah, see, it should be working. It was the easy one and it's just not. And so now I'm going to lose and I'm sad.
No.
That's okay. It's okay. Maybe it'll work on your phone. It's called Edge Gestures. That'll be the new sales pitch for any app that doesn't work. Maybe it'll work on your phone.
Maybe it'll work on your phone.
Edge Gestures. Why don't you check it out for yourself and see if you can get it to work? There you go. all right. I'm going to move on and just give up on that one. Steven, I actually found yours to be incredibly interesting because I feel like we actually talked about your app and the story behind this, and actually the XDA article on this last year when it was published. So I'm happy that you brought it in because it forced me to go through the process because I really wanted to try it out and then I forgot about it. So talk about your app and I'll show it off.
All right. So my app that I chose is Substratum and also Andromeda. So Substratum is the It's an app that lets you do theming for your phone. And this has been in the works for a solid chunk of time with contributions from Sony, Google, and a bunch of others to the Android core infrastructure that allows this to happen. So Substratum, and until Oreo, this was a bit of a pain to use because you had to be rooted and you had to do all of this extra work to get up and running. But Andromeda, which is, I guess, the kind of the keys part here, allows you to do this on, Substratum's the free one. Andromeda costs, I believe, right?
Andromeda, I can't remember if it cost. Maybe it did and I bought it way back when, but when I went to install it this time, it didn't ask me to pay, so...
Oh, okay.
But it, actually, you know what? Yeah, that would be really strange because I think they are selling this. What do you see?
Oh, yep. It's a...
Okay, so I must have bought it last year and with the intention to use it, and then it didn't show that when I installed it today. So $199.
Okay. So Andromeda lets you use Substratum on an Oreo device without root. And what Substratum does is it lets you go in and apply themes to change pretty much any bit of your phone that you want to change the look of. You can make it have a dark theme. You can change the look of the navigation buttons. You can change the type of emoji you're using. And it's ridiculously customizable. It's literally, if there's anything you want to change about your phone in terms of looks, there's probably a theme to do it somewhere.
Now I'm building it, by the way. I've got the Baltic UI that I had downloaded, and I just went in there and toggled on all of the different UI elements to theme, and now it's applying it. Applied. It says some errors, but I bet you anything, themes look a little different.
And there we go. I think you got the different notification pull down there.
Yep, down there is a little bit altered. Yeah. I don't know what different UI elements are changed.
I believe for this one, the notification pull down was one of the big changes. How it's a dark look to it and with the blue and stuff, I believe.
Yeah.
But this is just one one overlay. You can pick other overlays, and this is kind of a sneak peek at what Google's working on, because it's using. It's using functionality that's built into Android itself, and it's making it accessible to us to tweak how we want. So it really is kind of a sneak peek at what's hopefully coming up from Google, although it probably won't be quite as powerful as Substratum itself is. It's fun to play around with. If you're looking to tweak the phone to be exactly the phone that you want to get to be your phone, not just a phone, it's the app to get.
Yeah, it's cool. I love that you're able to make some of these seemingly system deep changes and not to have to go root. Because, I mean, you know, when I was really into customizing my phone, a lot of the stuff that apps like this would even allow for enable installed overlays. There we go. That's what we needed to do, I think. Would require root, and that requires a whole different level of sophistication and knowledge about as far as how to connect to it in the right way in order to make that happen, how to root your device and all that kind of stuff. So it's nice that you can actually do some of these changes without having that extra layer of complication. So cool. And it actually, I should also mention, like, the process of installing it it's a little, I mean, there are some steps to it. They have a Mac, a PC, and a Linux app that you have to install and run. And while that's running on your device, you turn it, you go into the developer settings and you put on USB debugging. And then when you plug it in, the app on your PC or Mac, whatever, I use the Mac app, recognizes the phone and you clear it. And after you clear it, it basically registers the ability to make these changes. So, you know, you can't just do this 100% on your device. You have to have that sync up to your PC in order to make it happen initially. So, JJ is saying, check Chrome. The icons look different. And let's see here. I'm going into Chrome right now to see. It's really, I don't know if I'm seeing anything different. It's hard to know also because I'm on a OnePlus 5T and it kind of changes things too. But
yeah, I actually haven't used the Baltic UI so I'm not quite sure.
Let's see here.
What Baltic UI itself is supposed to look like.
Flare UI. Well, there's a bunch of different themes, and obviously they're going to charge for them. But if you install them, they have different. You know, they give you different theming capabilities, different looks on the icons and all this kind of stuff. It's probably one of those things that you just kind of have to dive in there. There's actually a marketplace inside the app that gives you all of the different themes that you can get right to and kind of play around with them and check them out. So,
and one of my favorite bits about Substratum is that it's a good chunk of the core framework for it is actually open source. You can find it on GitHub.
Nice.
You can go, you can take a look at the code, you can contribute if you want, and really get the exact phone you want, set your phone up exactly how you want your phone to be.
And not have to root it in order to do it.
Nobody wants to root.
Some.
I want to root.
Some do. Some do, yes. Flo doesn't want to root, is what I really meant to say about that.
All right, so check out Andromeda. That's the $1.99 for the app that kind of does the syncing between the PC that you're using and the phone to make it capable of making these changes. And then you'll want to install Substratum Theme Engine, and that, I believe, is free. And you can find that, install that, and then that's your theme manager, essentially, to apply a theme. Very cool stuff. Your demo went more smoothly than mine, Stephen. Congratulations. Flo, is your demo going to go more smoothly than mine?
Well, we'll see, because I'm bringing the beta testing catalog into the arena this week.
Okay.
So maybe you want to try out some new apps. Maybe you want to figure out what beta apps you've got installed on your phone already. Maybe you're having a hard time finding the beta apps in the Play Store. Maybe you just want to help some developers. And you can with Beta Testing Catalog, which essentially aggregates all of these beta apps and offers links to like the Google Plus communities where you can offer feedback, offers links where you can opt into the beta so you can actually get access to the app. All you have to do for this to work is log in with your Google account. So then there is just, that.
Yeah.
You will have to log in with your Google account. But of course, that's how you download apps and get into beta.
We do a lot of things.
So if you feel comfortable doing that, beta testing catalog, let me actually turn down because I didn't realize it was going to be so high on the camera. There we go. So as you can see, here's the menu. It's pretty obvious. You've got your catalog where you can... Come on, Wi-Fi. Come on and load. Oh, my goodness. Wait. Oh, I don't have Wi-Fi here, actually. Hold on. I apologize. I actually didn't set up the Wi-Fi like a silly person.
That's okay.
Here we are. It's coming on.
All right.
It just logged on. There we go. That's why it wasn't working.
So these are all beta.
These are
all apps in like an active beta testing mode within the Play Store?
Yes, these are all in active beta testing mode in the Play Store. And if you go through them, you can actually see the active ratings for the apps already. So if you're thinking, boy, that app looks really shady and it's got a rating of 0, like this one does, or a rating of 1, like this one. I mean, this one is probably fine because I've seen this around. But if it's got these low ratings, it's got to make you think, right?
Yeah.
Right. I have seen 4s and 5s on here, so they do exist. But it's kind of just fun to scroll through, see what's coming out on the store. I mean, look, we've got already things that we recognize. We've got Discord right here. We've got the Cake web browser. We've got Authy. And actually, these ratings are for the beta ratings, just to let people know how these beta versions are doing. We've got the Daily Mail for those of you who like your daily trash news. Daily Mail. We've got what's new, what's trending around in the app. Of course, there are ads. It is free, after all, and we do want to support the developers. So that's something that, you will have to take into consideration. Also shows you what is installed. So now you can see all the betas that I'm a part of. you know, you've got your...
You're living the beta life.
I mean, why the heck not? Yeah. Also, I write about this stuff, so I will endure the beta for you, dear consumers. I'm in some weird betas, too, that I didn't even realize I was in. I didn't even know I was in the HBO Now beta. Like, I didn't know until I downloaded this app today.
Just think of all the HBO you're seeing that people not in the beta
right?
aren't
Right? Like,
seeing.
What does that even mean? and so you've also got, like, a couple of other links, contacts, logging out of your Google Play account. Maybe you want to switch. And then there's categories. So it's pretty self-explanatory. So let me show you how to download an app real quick just so you can see what it's like. Here's Google Maps Go. That's from Google. Mm-hmm. That's the light version of Google Maps. So let's install that. We're going to go in here. If you hit this floating action button, you're going to get a link to the Google Play Store, or you're going to get a link to share it. I don't really find that to be a necessary UI functionality, so you're probably not going to use that unless you want to go straight to the Google Play Store and deal with it yourself. Here, though, you can opt in from the page very easily, become a tester right there. All right, I'm in the testing program. Now I can just go back. And now I can go to the Google Play Store. But my device isn't compatible with this version, so it doesn't matter. Regardless, that's how you can download beta apps for fun if you're just like bored and, you know, you just want to
Google Maps Go might be isolated to like Android One devices.
Yeah, it is, which is why now I'm going to show you how to install.
That's probably why it wouldn't allow you to install.
So you go to the Google Play Store and then you install it, and now you've got the beta version. In fact, I'm going to let this download real quick because look at those Wi-Fi speeds.
Yeah, I know. Brick House. Just take it in.
What's that like?
And then you'll have it.
And then I should have it. I mean, if we're going to be smart here, if we're going to be smart and work.
Let's hope so.
There we go. Discord right here.
Nice.
And you can see the rating for it from the people.
Awesome.
So yeah, beta testing catalog. Something to do if you're looking for some new apps.
And that's beta and then testing catalog, all one word.
Yes. And, you know, I will say there are pros to getting a beta app. You know, I got access to a lot of Snapchat features before I got that ugly UI you're all complaining about right now, way before you guys did.
Oh, you're so lucky.
You know, well, but that's what I do.
It's I feel like it's fun to be on the beta track. Sometimes you get
I'm on the Instagram
insight.
Beta. I got a lot of stuff there before the rest of y'all, which was really fun having a... I will say the thing about having a beta app, expect a lot of crashing.
Can happen.
Especially if you're also on the beta of Android.
It can happen, or it's, lagging, you know, or hey, something didn't appear there and it's supposed to.
You know,
I gotta reset the app.
Know what you're getting into.
Yeah. It's not gonna work 100%.
Adjust your expectations.
There you go. Beta testing catalog is the name of that app. So you now have a choice. Dear viewer/listener, go to twit.to/AAApoll356 and place your vote for your favorite app. You can either vote with the app that performed well that you liked, or you can vote for the app that performed not at all, but you like the idea of it. Just throwing that out there.
You like the idea of the app, definitely, but only vote on the merit of the app itself.
That's right. Edge Gestures, beta testing catalog, or the Andromeda/Substratum theme engine combo. Victor gets the first vote, as far as I know. And what is he going to vote for?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I know what Victor's going to do when he gets home tonight.
He's going to theme his phone.
After everybody goes to bed, because I've done this myself, staying up till 3 a.m, theming your phone.
Oh, man, when I was doing the whole root and ROM thing, I had so many nights where I'm just parked on the couch, some random thing flickering away on TV. And I had the laptop and my phone plugged into it, just punching keys and dumping a new ROM on there and getting it all set up. It was a thing. Do you still do this, Steven? Do you root and ROM a lot? Or
sadly, no, actually. I haven't. Last time I flashed a custom ROM on my primary device was actually like 2 years ago.
Okay.
About 2 years ago. I still have other device that I can throw custom ROMs on. But it's gone. A lot of devices have gone quite locked down lately, so it's it can be hard to get the custom ROM on certain devices sometimes now. Yeah. Unfortunately,
yeah, it's not as wide open as it once was, and you know. Manufacturers have done a good job of adding a lot of those features or adding the customizability into their ROMs to kind of make it less necessary, I would say.
And I can easily find an app that changes the icons for me.
Yeah.
And I don't have to root.
Back when I started using custom ROMs, it was because I had a TouchWiz device that was super slow.
Yeah.
And then with CyanogenMod, it was super fast.
Yep.
Now... Essential super fast.
Yeah, they're all super fast.
My HD10 was super fast. You're not seeing too many extremely slow devices anymore. There still are some, but there's less of them.
Yep.
Some of us used to root back in the day just to get access to all that data we were paying for on our phones.
Oh, yeah. That's another...
Do you guys remember those days?
Yeah.
They were very... Will it work or won't it work today in class, in college? Yes.
I remember that well. Yep. All right. I think that is it. twit.to/AAApoll356. And we'll check on that next week.
Next week.
And as for this week, I think this week is over. It is. There's no more week to be had.
Oh, thank God.
Take the rest of the week off, Flo. Take the rest of the week off, Stephen. But before you go, just want to say thank you. It's awesome having you on. Thank you for joining us
tonight.
Great
being on.
Yeah, this is a lot
Great
of fun.
To be here.
Tell people where you want them to find all your work online. What do you want them to know?
You can find my writing at xdadevelopers.com, of course. But follow me on Twitter at SZIM92 at... SZIM92 on Twitter.
Right on, Stephen. Appreciate it. We'll have you back soon. Are you going to do you know if you're going to Google I/O this year?
Absolutely.
Right
it
on.
It was a ton of fun last year. I can't wait to be there again.
Awesome. Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you, sir. What about you, Flo? What's up? What's new in your world?
I've just embarked on DIY security. So I'm doing the first review for Tom's Guide. We got the Nest Secure review coming up.
Nice.
I'm getting all that, trying to figure out how that works. And I'm now covering the Google Home for review.com/USA Today. So my first article just went up there. So if you'd like to go see it, it is up there. Right now.
Just go find it.
I mean, I'm sure I tweeted it. Of course, I am on Twitter at Oh That Flow. I'm also on Instagram and I'm on Snapchat. If you want behind the scenes of my work from home life, which is apparently what I offer to people on the internet. It literally Snapchat is me ranting into my phone while I test things out at home because I have no coworkers, so you're my coworkers now. So come be my coworker on Snapchat, even though I know everyone's going to Instagram. And, you know, I'll hopefully, like we were talking about earlier in our WordPress ad, hopefully I'll have an update for you on the website soon.
Awesome. Can't wait to see it. Thanks, Flo.
Thank you.
Thank you, Victor. Appreciate all your work today. You were jumped through hoops with those segment drops. And I appreciate it.
You were dunking those baskets.
You're just like, whoosh, 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 nothing but net. That's
while that that's Harlem Victor. Globetrotters song plays.
Anyways, thank you, Victor. Always appreciate your help.
No problem.
YellowGoldMusic.com, JasonHowell.net if you want to find things that I do. Otherwise, before we wrap up, I should let you know, one, the Twit Flash Briefing. Mentioned this last week. It's now available in Canada, Australia, the United Kingdom, and India. So if you have an Echo device in those areas and you haven't already, go into your Alexa app, find the settings, and under Flash Briefing, look for Twit, and you can get us in your ear holes every single morning. And also, it's time for our yearly Twit survey. We want to hear from you so that we can, you know, serve you better, give you the content that you actually want. We're not taking your data. We're not taking your contact information. You can provide however much or however little you want to inform us on the things that we're doing right and well for you. And maybe there are ways that we can better serve you. So let us know. twit.tv/survey. and be part of that, and you will be heard. Otherwise, that's it for this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Sorry we didn't get to any emails this week. It was just a jam-packed show. AAA@twit.tv, though, and I promise to read through every single email, whether it makes it in or not. Twitter, we are at Android Show. Arena Apps list can be found at twit.to/AndroidApps. You can find show notes and past episodes at twit.tv/AAA. That's our home on the web where you're going to find all the important information. If you want to watch live, you can. Tickets at twit.tv, and you can sit in the studio. We have people do that from time to time. We're happy to have you. Or you can catch us live on the streams. That's every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. That's it for this week. We'll see y'all next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody. Yeah.
I kind of wish we clapped like at the end of the new screensavers. Just goes,
one thing that I kind of skipped over earlier that I just want to mention to you guys, for the 845, one of the things that we noticed that kind of got skipped over by a lot was that the reference device actually is using the energy aware scheduling for the CPU governor.
So, okay, explain that.
So I'm not probably the best person to explain it, but for the scaling, for what frequency to set the CPU at, depending on the load, there was a massive improvement in it recently for Linux called energy aware scheduling. And it's the name of the scheduler itself is, I'm going to look this up because it's
energy at work scheduler,
energy aware scheduler and
aware.
The actual name of the scheduler is I can't even pronounce it. SCHEDUTIL. It's, I don't know if it'll be in the actual final devices.
Schedule.
Yeah. They're all weird names like on demand or,
schedule
or badass governor. Yeah. Oh, that's probably it.
Schedutil. Yeah.
So I don't know if it'll make it into actual devices, when production devices, but this is probably one of the biggest behind the scenes improvements for this year for the 845 if it does make it in.
So okay, so I'm trying to understand what is the net effect of something like this? Is it just more?
Well, they call it. I saw over here because it's touchscreen. Mm-hmm. They call it the governor.
The governor.
Yeah, so it controls what the frequency the frequency. Set at,
okay.
Depending on the workloads.
Okay.
So, CPU governors are all terrible because no one can figure out how to do them well.
Right.
And if it actually makes it into final production devices, it's going to be a decent improvement over the old governors in use, which will make it more energy efficient.
Okay. All right. More
efficient.
And
more responsive, potentially.
Right.
Potentially also more responsive.
I mean, it kind of ties in with what we were talking about with rooting and ROMing, because I remember when I was rooting...
Yep.
My device a lot back in the day. And we had the Francisco Franco on with the Franco kernel way back when. He's still doing that, by the way. But anyways, there was a lot of tweaking things with the scheduler. I can't remember which app I was using in order to do that. And I never fully understood it. But of course I played around with it because it was in there. And I was like, I totally noticed a difference.
But I don't know if it'll make it into production devices, so we didn't really talk too much about it in our article.
Yeah.
But if it does, this will be a nice little improvement.
Oh, interesting. All right, cool. Wade County had it. Set CPU. That's exactly what it was.
Oh, nice.
Set CPU was the app that that I used to do that, if I didn't understand it. Very cool. Awesome. We might
This is why I love Steven when you're on the show, because we just learn stuff. No, we really appreciate it. Seriously.
Yeah we really do.
It's fun. It's fun stuff.
Well, actually, we've got the holiday coming up. Is Valentine's Day a holiday or is it just a special day?
It's a Hallmark holiday. So in America, that makes it a holiday.
It's a Hallmark. Hallmark-a-day. Anyways, we have the seasonal hot and spicy.
By the way, somebody says Flo and Jason is muted. Got fixed.
Hot and spicy cinnamon Oreo is what we have here.
Hot and spicy.
That's what we're going to taste.
Whoa.
Supposedly they're hot and spicy. Flo, you have your own package of hot and spicy cinnamon Oreos.
I do.
So why?
I do.
I forgot that I had mine. She
brought hers. I needed to make sure that one of us had it. So
Yet wow. again, they look blood red. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. But I have a feeling these are going to be good. I think really? This is a flavor combination that's going to work.
All right, here we go.
I don't know. I guess we'll see.
All right.
It's toothpaste.
Got to give it a second. The my taste buds are confused right now. I could go for more hot, to be honest. It's not nearly hot and spicy enough, I think. I want it to have a kick, and it doesn't have a kick.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't mind a little kick in it.
Yeah.
Because I like a little kick in my chocolate.
It's kind of underwhelming, to be honest. I expected more out of hot and spicy Oreos. They're not bad. They just don't scream flavor. It's hard to go more than middle of the road on these. 5. Oh, spicy. Nice. I like what you did there. Go away, Sean.
Please, go away.
Sean, seriously, you're not invited on this show. All right.
Not a friend of the show.
I give it 5. What do you give it?
I give it a 5 as well, but I'll probably eat a couple more.
Yeah.
Because I bought a whole box of them now. I have to eat them.
We'll see what everybody else feels about those two. There you go. Hot spicy Oreos. Done. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.